Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. Sarah, happy Friday. I am in New York City. You are in the City of Angels.
Yeah, how are you? New York City. I'm good. Yeah, we just got done with a live show. I am disheveled, unshowered, slightly hungover. But that's, we had a great LA live show.
Well, we're going to save that for the back half of the show because I have so many questions. I need to hear all about it.
We missed you, man.
Vicariously through. I missed you guys. I was like sending you emo texts.
I know.
But first, we need to talk. I assume that since you were taping your YouTube live stream on the empty bus, you did not have time to read. That was a great question. It was a great bit, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Pocket hose content, A++.
So, wait, it was so funny. I will say sometimes I am reminded that I am an immigrant into this world of liberals whose comments on the live stream were all about the carbon footprint of the bus. And they were like, it was like, and what was funny is, so we were filming, we were at the back half of the bus. And so the front half of the bus was filled with people, but it looked like on camera that there was nobody else on the bus. Well,
you missed the easy joke, which is that we forced all the little people to get out of the frame. We didn't want them on camera with us.
That's right. They were,
I was literally waiting for you to make that joke while I'm listening to the show. Anyway, we'll talk all about that. But I wrote yesterday with a little bit of hopium because I just want to list off some things that have happened. Brian Fitzpatrick said about the slush fund, we're going to try to kill it. The Senate seems to have decided they will not give Trump $1 billion for his ballroom. Representative Don Bacon says that they got enough votes for their discharge petition, and they're going to force the vote in the House on the Ukraine aid package next week. Quinnipiac showed Trump at negative 24 approval. Fox showed him at negative 22. Gas is at $4.56 for the Memorial Day weekend when 40 million Americans plan to drive long distances. Consumer confidence just came out this morning, is at an all-time low, lower than it was at any point during the 70s or during the great financial crisis of 2008. And this week, again, these are all things that have happened in the last 4 days.
I know, but I love how all this terrible news is your hopium, but go ahead.
Well,
I know. I understand.
So, let's just start with that. I mean, that sounds to me like a president with the walls maybe starting to close in on him a little bit.
I think that it definitely sounds like a president who launched an attack on a bunch of people in his own party through the primaries. And now those people still have 7 months in office with which to return the favor. And his increasing unpopularity means that them bucking him probably doesn't lead to them getting screamed at in airports or, you know, Donald Trump's power over the Republican Party has always been part that just the voters were with him and part that voters who were not, who perceived candidates or Republicans to not be with Trump would be menaced. And this is something that people constantly, I think, forget or underappreciate about how much, if you were a Republican and you voted to impeach Trump, I just remember the quotations that we saw coming out. It was in the Mitt Romney book of people who said, like, yeah, obviously he should be impeached, but, you know, I've got kids. And that implicit thing was, I can't have people coming. And like
Pete Mayer talked about this.
Yeah, that's right. And so his low level. Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't still have, obviously, his cult, his fervent supporters who are never going to dip out on him. But he's at a real point of weakness, and this allows for Republicans to turn on him now. But like, that's it's the bad news as well as the good news, right? Because the bad news is watching these guys suddenly catch their conscience the moment that they no longer have to win elected office is, of course, very telling to something that we've always known, which is that they know right from wrong. They choose wrong to keep their seat. And so now that they can, now that they don't need to win their seat, they can choose right. And that is a, that's a deeply sad commentary on current politics.
I mean, it's better than nothing.
Right.
But it's, it isn't what the moment demanded, you know, and that, that's what I feel. I feel a little, we have to live in the real world, right? You go to the war with the army you have, not the army you wish you have. And so as a, it is better than nothing to have these guys like Bill Cassidy switching their votes now. And like the War Powers Act looks like it's going to be a thing. And I'm grateful for them doing it. And I don't want to take the position of like trying to wave off anybody who's finally doing something to stop him. But I think sad is the right, like this moment demanded that. I mean, we've been doing this for a decade.
Yeah. And it's they knew
a decade.
Like and, watching Cassidy, like, yes, these are the votes I would have taken if I was just doing what my conscience demanded or what I believe to be right and true. Yeah. Like, this is how I would behave. Yeah, what was good for the country, totally. And this is where there's, like, this separation that I'm always trying to, as somebody, and I'm sure you feel this too, there are your personal beliefs, and then there's your analysis of what's happening, right? Or your thoughts on strategy. No,
for me, those are the same. I can't wait for, I want Graham Platner to be president, Sarah, because I love Nazi tattoos.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's tough. But in this case, it's a matter of, as a strategic matter, Democrats should go to grab Cassidy, right? They should go grab Thomas Massey, and they should, you know, there's such narrow margins right now. And Susan Collins is basically free to do whatever she wants because she's in an election cycle where she's got to win over Democrats because she's in a bluer state than most people up for re-election. So she's going to get a pass from everybody to buck Trump. And so, like, you can put something together, and you should. You should use all of these Republicans who are mad at Trump because he came at them so hard. I mean, he spent, what, $19 million against Massey in one congressional seat? Like, it's ridiculous. And he's obviously been personally toxic to them. I'm sure they're getting targeted in all kinds of ways. So, like, they're in YOLO mode. Democrats should seize them in YOLO mode. I just can't find any personal satisfaction from watching Cassidy behave this way, because it to me is just a reminder of something we already knew, which is just that this guy was faking it the whole time, just for political purposes. And that is one of the, it's just so gross to think about.
It's bad. It's bad. So in addition to those are not scandals. Those are just like objectively bad things happening in the country or defeats for political defeats for Trump. I'm going to read you a list. Again, this was put together for me by Catherine Rampell. She and I just like slacking about this. And like when you put it all in one place, it does become a little bit shocking. So in the course of one week, Donald Trump lets himself out of a potential $100 million IRS fine. He gives himself and his family and friends immunity from all future IRS investigations. It is revealed that he bought and sold $735 million worth of stocks and was issuing buy and sell orders while these companies had business before his government. Somebody with knowledge in advance of his March 23 Truth Social post about postponing the strikes on Iran did insider trading worth about $800 million. He accepted a $5 million donation from Big Tobacco a few days before he deregulated stuff. And Don Jr.'s venture capital firm went from $200 million of assets under management to $3.5 billion under management. These are things which all surfaced in the last 4 days.
Yep.
I don't know what to say. I mean, it's so much that I think none of it matters.
Well, that's a shocking JVL take.
No, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's so, it's so big. It's so horrible. It's so unprecedented, as the Axios story about this calls it, that, like, it just, I don't know. Like, it just,
I do hate the word unprecedented. It is
so much.
This idea of like, it is such a neutral word. The neutrality of that word to suggest that it's just, well, it's something that's never happened before without indicating it's something awful that's never happened before. Okay. It's something corrupt that's never happened before.
So literally before you and I sat down, I was doing my Friday live show with Catherine Rempel, and I went on a rant about exactly this. I said, this, I have a series of words that I freak me out and I hate, one of which is unprecedented, another of which is controversial.
Mm.
Right? Like, oh, well, he has some controversial opinions. Like, no, I'm sorry. The Declaration of Independence was controversial too. Like, tell us, are David Duke's opinions controversial or are they fucking repugnant? Yeah. Just say it, right? You know, or the polarizing figure. Oh, well, he's polarizing. No, I hate, oh, that, all of that shit, unprecedented, polarizing, like that is why, that is like old media death, right? That is, or not even death, but just media, which is not equal to the moment. And I hate it.
Yeah, this is where in all of the years of listening to conservatives rail against the liberal bias in media, the liberal bias may be true, but the mainstream media's inability to render judgment on things that are obviously corrupt and morally bankrupt is a real problem for the moment. But unprecedented gets me more, just because it. Here's the thing about unprecedented: is it, unlike a couple of those other words, those at least have negative connotations. Like, you at least know if it's controversial, like one side thinks it's bad, like someone in there thinks it's bad. Unprecedented is like, we landed on the moon and it's unprecedented. Like, there's something about the nature of unprecedented that leaves people with the notion that it could be just a barrier breaking goodness.
Let me read to you the Axios piece. I'm sorry. Okay. Like, I'm, you know what, everybody, we're pulling the car over. Because mom and dad want to yell about this. Never in 250 years has America witnessed a sitting president shield himself and his family from tax scrutiny after leveraging policies that benefit his own business and personal portfolios, as Donald Trump has done. ... This isn't a hidden scandal. Trump has done this publicly and proudly. Last year, we called it the most unprecedented presidency in 250 years. In doing so, he has set a precedent, once so unfathomable as to be laughable, that it's okay for presidents and family members to make billions off of deals by affected by government decisions and then use the Justice Department to secure lifetime protection. Blah, 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 blah. We were debating how to capture just how unprecedented Trump's actions are when every week of every year seems filled with unprecedented words and actions. I want to gouge my fucking eyes out.
I know, man. I know. It is maddening. It is maddening. And it is the,
here,
it
here's, is the, here's the best ... between the lines. This is more than just a Trump problem.
Here's the thing is that it is the moral detachment is maddening. I'll tell you though, just since we're pulled over and now we're on a roll. There's like a spate of stories in the NRO genre of thinkers, right? The anti-antis, you know, the Tim Carneys, who, I'm sorry, these people have the laziest brains on the planet. But you know what they do? They're like, speaking of unprecedented, their whole shtick is Donald Trump learned this from watching Democrats. Right. They always do this particular flip where it's like, let me tell you this other time that a Democrat did something that, by the way, bears actually no resemblance to what Donald Trump is doing right now. But it's like they have this tick in their brain that just says, quick, let's take this one instance, as opposed to being able to see the panoply of instances all brought together under one like thing of corruption. Let's just take this one thing and see if we can find something that is a remotely plausible corollary from any time in history that a Democrat has done something. And even though they actually bear no real resemblance, either in scale or in legality, we're going to try to make the case that they can. This is like a baseball crank special. And I will tell you, it is also something that is maddening.
God, it's the worst. Okay, anyway, wait, I don't know. Like, do you have thoughts about all these scandals and the ability for it to break through? And
so I do. And look, I'm going to do one of my things that'll probably annoy people a little bit. But this is,
I talk about this in my book.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were gonna.
Well, I do actually, but that's not where I was. I was gonna say this is where you get into Democrats like messaging catastrophe. Like, it really, people are like, Sarah, you blame Democrats. And I'm like, guys, Hunter Biden sold some paintings for more money than they were probably worth. And he sat on some boards and like, it was corrupt. It was a nepotism, trading on his name. You know, it was not good. It is nothing compared to what is happening right now. Like, in the amount of remuneration, like the personal remuneration that the Trump kids are getting from the government actively versus what Hunter Biden was doing when I think his dad wasn't even in office. And it was just like, his name was Biden and he was able to monetize that. And that is not a good thing in our politics. But he had problems. Like, he's got these problems, gun problem, crack problems. This was a troubled individual, who was not a good actor. The Trump boys, the Trump family right now, and then Donald Trump himself, like, they are just raping the American people financially. They are mugging us, stealing our money in plain sight. And again, the same people who, this is sort of my point, is, if this was happening and it was a Democrat who was doing this, Republicans would at every turn be hammering how much, like, they would just take the Don Jr. consulting firm and they would take that one stat and they would hammer it over and over and over and over again. It's all they would talk about. It would launch a gajillion podcasts. What are Democrats talking about right now?
Their own autopsy,
which they have completely screwed up by like trying to hide it and then having a friend write it. And then like, and it's just, so you guys are in a circular firing squad. And it is like gobsmacking. Like, it's not just the circular firing squad. Like, I posted about it too, in part because it's like, what's happening with the autopsy is a microcosm of the communications challenges that you don't need to read the autopsy. You just have to look at the way the autopsy release was handled to see how Democrats are struggling with trying to. And so, to your point, it's not that I don't think it's that nobody cares about what you're saying. I think that in an age of attention, the attention economy and dominance narratives, and I just think the right has the ability to sort of overwhelm that system, right? And dominate it with the information that they have. So they can make much, much, much smaller things that are barely scandals, little scandalets, into, you know, a whole sense of corruption, the Biden crime family. Whereas what? The Trump guys just get to. So I don't think that voters can't be persuaded on this. I do think this is one of those places where having a communications mechanism that could hammer it into people's heads would be enormously valuable.
Propaganda works. There's a reason dictators do it. There's another big thing coming. Potentially big thing. I think kind of a big thing. We're going to talk about it in a second. But first, we're going to do a quick word from you.
Quick ad on the Secret Pod. Let's go. This episode is sponsored by Quince. Quince is my wardrobe's MVP. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are flattering, and everything just works without overthinking it, which is great because I hate thinking about clothes. Quince makes it easy to refresh your everyday wardrobe this spring with pieces that feel as good as they look. They use premium materials like 100% European linen, organic cotton, and ultra-soft denim. Their lightweight linen pants, dresses, and tops start at $30 and are effortless, breathable, and easy to wear on repeat. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have friends all the time who hear me doing the Quince ad. So they go buy things from Quince and they tell me how great all the stuff is and how inexpensive all the stuff is. And that's because Quince works directly with ethical factories that cut out the middleman. So you're paying for quality and craftsmanship and not that brand markup. Now that I'm out here in California and I was getting ready for this trip, it was awesome to be able to look across my wardrobe at all the things that I've gotten from Quince that make me feel, you know, cool, comfortable out here on the West Coast. Staples like European linen button-down shirts that are perfect for summer and spring, whether you're packing for Southern California or getting your closet ready for the warmer weather. Refresh your everyday wardrobe with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/thenextlevel for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/thenextlevel for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/thenextlevel. Thanks, Quince.
Okay. So I don't know if you clocked this since you've been traveling and doing live shows. But in a 24-hour period this week, the Department of Justice issued an indictment for Raul Castro.
I did see that.
Marco Rubio put out an official message in Spanish calling on the Cuban people to overthrow their government.
Okay.
And the USS Nimitz carrier strike group entered the South Caribbean.
Sure.
And just this morning, Friday, as we were taping, Donald Trump said that he was not going to be going to his son's wedding because he's got very important government stuff to do this weekend.
Okay. Did you also see that Tulsi is resigning?
I also saw that Tulsi is resigning. Yes. I don't want to touch the Tulsi thing because it has just happened 5 minutes ago. It's being tied to her husband is having health problems. I am somewhat skeptical, but I don't want to put voice to those things. I want to begin from the position of assuming the best and reporting
wishing,
why they're
wishing her that. Husband well.
Wishing her husband well and their family well. And, you know, report subsequent reporting will either confirm or dismantle that. We'll see. So it does seem to me like we're going to do Cuba possibly very soon. I mean, it is Memorial Day weekend. It kind of fits, right? I mean, I don't know. It just feels like Cuba is coming and yeah. That Cuba is going to be either the palate cleanser at the end of Iran or it's going to be done right before the end of Iran to make whatever Iran, whatever the memo of understanding that ends Iran will be, seem a little bit more palatable. It just feels like this is coming and there ain't no stopping it. Thoughts?
Do you remember that old, I don't know if it's a song exactly, but it's like, I know an old woman who swallowed a fly. She swallowed a fly. Perhaps she'll die. And say, I know an old woman who swallowed a spider. She swallowed a spider to catch the fly. She swallowed the fly to catch the flea, whatever. And, you know, and then it's like, eventually she swallows a cat and a horse. They're all trying to catch the next thing. And then she dies. It does feel, I know, I can see it on your face. You're like, I don't, why are you doing this right now, Sarah? It feels like, you know, Trump swallowed the Epstein files and then he swallowed Venezuela. It's like we are going to keep pushing into new catastrophes. And look, I don't know if they're precisely to distract from the other catastrophes, if they are meant to, hey, we have a catastrophe in Iran, so let's try Cuba because that might be an easy win and it'll make us look good at a time when everybody thinks that we are losing and failing on the foreign policy front. But of course, we've now destabilized Venezuela, we'll destabilize Cuba, we've destabilized the Middle East. And so where does this all head? Like in the short term, right, they're doing things in a very short-term way of thinking that I think over the long term, we find ourselves like they could have catastrophic consequences when it all comes together.
Yeah, I mean, but none of that's new. Like everything has always been short-term thinking, right? And he just, it was David Frum, was like, he's just spinning plates. you know, is a guy who's always just spinning plates to keep them up, and he'll figure out how to, the one plate falls and breaks, and he'll figure out how to spin up the next one, you know, when the time comes.
Yeah. Can I say, so one of the things, especially doing the live shows, but also I think you may have just said it in this podcast, there's a lot of this sort of 2.5 years, guys, we have another 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Somebody at one of the shows in the line was telling me mathematically, we are 1/3 of the way through Trump. And so, okay. I am sometimes, I don't mean grateful that there's still 2.5 years, but there's a part of me that thinks that Trump will have to deal with the consequences of these actions in the course of his term. Like, it is not like he is doing these in the last few months so he can leave a disaster for the next person. Like, the tariffs and the war in Iran, like, he is going to bear the consequences of these. He will bear the political, and Republicans will bear the political consequences. Now, of course, there's a long-term stuff. There is the extraordinarily high national debt. There is the, what are clearly going to be long-term geopolitical consequences of Trump. But a lot of this he will have to deal with. The other thing is that I do think, look, I'm not Catherine Rampell. I don't know a ton about the economy, but it does sort of feel very dot-com bubbly right now. It feels like the entire economy is being propped up by the AI bubble. And when you talk about the consumer sentiment number, you know, now we're in my wheelhouse where it's like, look, I just been saying over and over again now since before Biden, before the election with Biden, like all I did was talk to you about how bad people are feeling about the economy, how much inflation is hurting them, and how detached it is sort of from the macro numbers, right? Like, the macro numbers just aren't how people feel. And I often think that consumer sentiment is a leading indicator of where the economy is going. And so just because the market feels good, I think that's your AI bubble, and the consumer sentiment number is the recession indicator. Now, again, I'm not an economist, but it does feel like at the end of the day, if voters are that unhappy about the state of things and consumer sentiment is at its all-time low, like, that's a real bad thing for the every current elected official.
Fingers crossed. We are going to delve into the Tina Peters discourse because you, Tim, and I had wildly divergent views on this. The Tina Peters commutation. And because we didn't have a Next Level this week, we didn't get to talk about it.
So Tim and I did do it at the live show. We had a big fight.
Well, you can tell me a little more. Maybe I'll be able to bring everybody back together.
Okay.
But we're going to do that on the other side. So guys, come and subscribe. Become a member. Join Bulwark Plus. Hang with us all the time, all the way. We'll have good feelings.
Come do it. It's fun. It's fun behind this wall.